please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Rob Osgood. He's the Emergency Management Director at Tufts Medical Center, and we're going to be focusing on vicarious rehearsal. He's had a number of amazing events happen there at the Tufts Medical Center. Rob has been dealing with incredible situations, such as the Patriot bombing down in Boston. And what would you do if you had an Ebola patient potentially come to your hospital? He's an amazing conversationalist, and he talks about how to make visual rehearsal work. Rob, welcome to the show.
Wow, thank you so much. It really is a pleasure to be here, even if it is by phone.
Well, that's okay. Phone is all right. You know, I did get to see you on stage at the main HR convention only a few months ago, and I got to tell you, you did a great job. That's why I said I got to have him on the show.
Oh, well, I really appreciate that. You were the one clapping, apparently.
Well, I think there are a few more than that, and we know that, but that's all right. Well, you know, you talk about something that is probably what I would consider the nightmare scenario for any HR professional or business leader or anyone, especially in your role as emergency management director. You plan, you think, you get all your policies in place, you make things happen, and then it happens, the big crisis. And you never know when, right?
Well, that's the truth. I like that word, crisis. I think that's an important word to use because it's scalable. You know, when we talk about those kinds of things, especially in emergency management, you know, we have things that are small scale, we have things that are large scale. But, you know, if we train ourselves and we train our brain, and we actually train our brain to work in conjunction with our bodies, then it doesn't really matter what that crisis is, whether it's large or small, you can respond and you can be prepared. You know, this is one of the things that I'm a big proponent of. There's a big difference between reacting and responding. Reacting is very reflexive. It's, you know, this is our natural tendency. But, you know, if we plan in advance and we train our brains to be better prepared, then we can respond during critical times and not react.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We all know people have different levels of what they consider a crisis, right? I mean, to some, a crisis is I broke a nail. To others, a crisis is like one of the things we're going to be talking today, the aftermath of the Patriot State bombing down in Boston. There's huge differences between the two, but to some, there is no difference in their mindset. And that is what we're really talking about today, is it not? Developing a mindset to be able to deliver when needed.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's interesting you say that, too, because I'm going to give you some of the industry secrets here. I'm going to give away the recipe for the secret sauce. You know, it doesn't really matter from the perspective of a director of emergency management what type of crisis it is. You know, our approach is usually pretty similar, depending, you know, some little nuances might change. But, you know, like you kind of mentioned, I was formerly a student of the theater, among other things. But, you know, crises follow a script. And sometimes we know what that script is going to be. Sometimes we don't, much like when you're sitting in the theater. But, you know, as sort of an audience member or a director of that script, you know, your approach doesn't really deviate too much.
When you're looking at getting into this line of work, does it matter the temperament? Is there training behind you? I'd like to hear a little bit about your role, your responsibilities, a little bit about your background so that people can say, hey, I fit like that and how I got into that and how you made that, you know, that switch and that transition.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, interestingly enough, it might be one of those things where I don't know any better. I started working in healthcare when I was 18 years old. And I started working in hospitals. And my first role was as a patient sitter, which was basically, you know, if a patient was combative or they had sort of an altered mental status, they basically put me in that room with the patient to ensure their safety. And from there, I kind of became a nursing assistant and then an EMT, then an EMT in the emergency department, and really worked in emergency departments and on ambulances shortly thereafter and for many years. And so working in emergency response, working as a first responder, and also developing this ability to kind of be the guy that gets that 3 a.m. phone call when something happens, really was kind of the best training that I could possibly get, because it was really on-the-job training and life experience training. I actually did go to graduate school at the Mass Maritime Academy, and I received a master's degree in emergency management. And that was really the culmination of sort of all this training. And in addition to that, a whole bunch of certification programs, things like hazardous materials, things like crisis communications. There's a lot of training out there. And when people really want to get involved with emergency management, I get a lot of calls from students. I run a great internship program down here at Tufts for folks that are interested in emergency management. And I have a lot of guest speakers at some of my meetings and a lot of just guests throughout the day, folks that shadow me. Because it's interesting that, kind of like you alluded to earlier, the emergency management concepts and this sort of disaster response and crisis management has so many applications, not just in everyday business, but certainly everyday life as well. And these trainings and these sort of approaches really have applications across the gamut of industry.
Well, there's no question that what you're going to be talking about today is relevant, not just in times of crisis, but in times of thought processes and organization and how people should, you know, maybe think about how they run their lives, not only business, in terms of their own teams, their own business, their own personal lives.
Correct. That's exactly right.
All right, so let's get down into a little bit of the story behind this. So tell the audience where you were, how this all came about here when the Patriots Day bombing happened. And for all those, of course, that probably remember, we are talking about the bombings that happened during the Boston Marathon in Boston, Massachusetts, only a few years ago. Tufts Medical Center's nearby. And so it happened. Put us there on the scenes and take us through.
Yeah, sure. So, you know what you should really know about Marathon Monday here in the city is it's really a day of pride here in the city of Boston, and it's certainly a day of pride here at Tufts. You know, we're the closest hospital, and we see the most runners every year, and that's really kind of an honor that we're able to contribute that to the city and serve these patients. But it's such a tremendous day in the emergency department. Our emergency department personnel are the best in the business, and we decorate the department. We wear special jerseys. The marathon colors are flying throughout the department. So really, it's an exciting day for us at Tufts Medical Center. And, you know, for us, we don't say that it's an emergency department event. We say it's a Tufts Medical Center event. It is all hands on deck. We plan months in advance, and we have everybody involved, lab, pharmacy, radiology, you name it. Everybody's at the table, and we're all planning, and we're ready for that day. I activate a emergency command post in the emergency department that day. So I'm sitting right there at the nurse's station with our frontline personnel, and I oversee the logistics. So I'm linked in with the city. I can talk to the finish line. You know, I'm there. I'm in it. And, you know, we had a very good day that day, as we do every Marathon Monday. It was a little slow. And then shortly after the explosions, we got an alert on this radio system that the city notifies us of disasters. And they said, attention Boston hospitals, reports of multiple explosions at the Boston Marathon finish line, prepare for multiple casualties. And, you know, there's a second where we kind of look at each other, and you can almost kind of feel each other breathing at the nurse's station. And one of our more experienced charge nurses looks at me and says, is this one of your crazy drills? And I say no, this is real. We need to huddle up. And so we huddle up, And basically the conversation from there was, we don't know what this is. We're a little bit uncertain of what the information that we had at that point. But we know that we're prepared because we've been through this multiple times in drills and exercises and certainly in our minds. And so we're going to do the best, the same thing that we do every day, and that's the best that we can do for the patients that are about to roll through those doors, because this is a time in their life when they need us the most. And really, I give credit to two people here. And the first is our old clinical nursing director, a woman by the name of Julie Compton, who she's no longer with the organization. She had an opportunity that she just couldn't pass up, and it was a big loss for us. But she's just a tremendous individual. And she said, listen, before we do anything, I want everybody to call your families, make sure that they're okay, and make sure you tell them that you're okay, because we are in for a very long day, and we have a lot to do. And she was very cool and very easy to listen to, and gave the staff great comfort to have her there. So that is now part of our plans, in which we ensure that in the event of an emergency, we call and make sure that everybody's okay, and we let them know that we're okay. That has now become concrete. And the other person that I really need to commend is our charge nurse, a woman by the name of Laura Caridio. She is our one of our seasoned charge nurses. She is our special event charge nurse. She does the marathon. She does 4th of July. She does New Year's Eve. These are all times in which we activate our emergency operations plan. And it also is the city of Boston, so we activate our emergency operations plan on St. Patrick's Day. And she's our charge nurse for that as well, all these sort of special events. And I honestly, Dave, I feel privileged that she knows my name, let alone the fact that I get to work with her so closely. And she really did exactly what a charge nurse is supposed to do by textbook. And she managed the department to a T, ensured that all of our emergency operations were prepared. All of our emergency operations in the emergency department were smooth, and that we were ready to treat these patients who had life-altering injuries.
It really does take a team, doesn't it? It really does take a preparation of an amazing team to go through any crisis that you're going to be dealing with at any level.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, this isn't, I think in healthcare, we do it exceptionally. Because, you know, it's just the very nature of the business. You're a part of a care team, and everybody, you know, it doesn't matter. The guy that changes the sheets on the bed is just as critical as the physician, because we function as an ensemble. But while it's very expressed in healthcare, I think that it's certainly applicable to any industry. You know, the way that we function as a team really is kind of a model for other industries to adopt, I think.
When we're talking about that preparation, you know, when all heck breaks loose, right, and everything's going on and people just need to do what they do, right, to get things done. Talk to us now a little bit about, in this next segment, as soon as we come back, what the preparation was, what the vicarious rehearsals were, how you developed it, and all this aspect behind it. And we're listening to the HR Power Hour. You're listening to Rob Osgood, the Emergency Management Director at Tufts Medical Center. He's going to be right back on News Talk WLOB. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit.
Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
What are you doing?
I'm turning this hedge into a dolphin-shaped topiary.
But this house isn't yours. In fact, I just showed it to you.
Oh, I'm gonna buy it.
Softly confident.
Well, I am an excellent candidate for a home loan. I pulled an 809 FICO score at Experian.com, so getting a mortgage is merely a formality. What do you think I should do with this other hedge? A giraffe?
Get your credit swagger on. Become a member of Experian Credit Tracker and find out your FICO score powered by Experian. FICO scores are used in 90% of credit decisions.
Summer's heat can be draining, especially on your vehicle's battery. And O'Reilly Auto Parts has the Super Start battery that's right for your vehicle. Rising temperatures shorten battery life and place added stress on one that's about to fail. Don't get caught in the summer's heat with a dead battery. Get your battery tested today free of charge at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sure, going fast is impressive. But performing over the long haul is even more impressive. And for that, there's STP. Each bottle of STP Complete Fuel System Cleaner in your tank helps remove power-robbing deposits to restore performance and keep your engine running better longer. Because greatness isn't just measured in seconds. True greatness is measured in years. STP. In for the long haul.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Rob Osgood. He is the Emergency Management Director at Tufts Medical Center in Boston. And we're talking about vicarious rehearsal. You know, Rob, we just talked about in the first section a little bit about being prepared, right? Being prepared for the unexpected, for the crisis that happens. That just doesn't happen by itself. It takes rehearsal. It takes practice. It takes getting ready. Talk to us about how business leaders, HR professionals can really take some of this information and make it into a plan for themselves.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. You're exactly right. You know, there's really a core difference between responding to the unexpected and being taken by surprise. And frankly, I feel like that difference is mental preparation. In healthcare, and particularly in healthcare emergency preparedness, we do a lot of training and we do a lot of exercises. And a lot of these things are kind of regulatory driven, right? Everybody has to do that. But what we do is we take it a step further. And we don't just run through the motions, we don't just follow the script. We actually go as far as mental preparation. We go as far as making people imagine themselves in the scene. Not just sort of the tactical sort of things. Am I meeting the checklist? Am I putting on this equipment properly? No, this is, okay, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you just got that call that something bad has happened. What are you going to do? Mentally picturing yourself in that scene. And I think that that's really applicable across businesses, and it's important for HR leaders and for business leaders, because we can use that in our teams every day. I try to train people not just to think about, you know, what happens if, but really to delve a little bit deeper into that and to actually think about what happens if something goes wrong and what are the different directions that it can go in.
When you're talking about this preparation, tell us the steps you have gone through to get the team ready. You know, how did it start? Where did you, you know, because for some people it may be, well, that makes sense, Rob, I get it. But how do I start?
Well, what's interesting is, for me, working with vicarious rehearsal actually started almost, you know, I hate to use the phrase, but almost as a coping mechanism. When I started working in healthcare at 18 years old, my first job was as a patient sitter, and we've talked about this. Basically, I was in a room with patients that were combative or altered mental status. But then I started working with patients who were on palliative care. These are patients that were in the final stages of their life. And so at 18 years old, I started working on the overnight shift with patients that weren't going to be with us too much longer. And, you know, David, as you can imagine, at 18 years old, that's a bit of a shocker.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, my friends were working at the grocery store. So, you know, I started using my commute on the subway system, going to work, to think about what I was going to do if I was with a patient and that happened, and to think about how I was going to feel in the room when a patient took their final breaths. And I would think about, you know, how it was going to make me feel afterwards. And running through those exercises in my head actually made me more prepared for when the actual event happened. And it probably happened a few times. From there, I got a position where I was the guy that got called when a patient passed away and they needed to be brought to the morgue. Again, same thing, that mental preparation beforehand. On my way to work, while I was at work, when my pager was going off and I was going to have to respond to the floor. And it served me well, even working as an EMT, which was kind of my next step. I'd be on the ambulance with my partner. We'd be on the way to a call for a patient with chest pain, and we would say, okay, what are we going to do if the patient starts going south? What are we going to do if the patient is on a certain medication? And we would just bounce this back off of each other, and we found that we got into a routine where we were going through these mental exercises, this mental preparation on the way to an emergency call, and it made us a better team.
Well, there's no question that that type of mental preparation can do many things for a team, right? You get in sync better. You start thinking more in tune with, okay, we've already talked about this. It's not fresh. It's not new. You really are able to just react almost more than having to talk it out at that point. And that makes you look more confident to the family who's watching, to the other team members around you. I mean, it really has an incredible, from my perspective, attitude shift in the overall event.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think the best example of this is if you were to ever work in an emergency department and watch the way that the team responds to something like a trauma. Now, one thing that I learned working as an EMT, and my EMT instructor always used to say this, an emergency is the patient's emergency. It's not your emergency. You're just at work. And that's a very, very important designation. When you are mentally trained and when you're prepared to respond, essentially you are in it. And you know how to follow your own, not just their written and operational protocols, but your own internal protocols as to how you're going to respond to certain situations within the situation. And so if you're ever in an emergency department and you watch the way that these folks work a trauma or work a cardiac arrest, it is just cool, calm, and collected because they've already surpassed that mental threshold of the shock of the situation. And so, you know, a lot of the times what makes trauma traumatic is not the injury, it's loss of control. But it's through mental preparation that we actually maintain control. Going back to the vicarious rehearsal, you know, when I got to grad school and I was at the Maritime Academy, we were in an organizational behavior class, and that was the first time that I actually realized what this even was when we started talking about formally how people engage in this. And this is used by Olympic athletes to visualize the win. It's used by the military to visualize combat and all these sort of things. But I had no idea. I had been doing it for years, And I had absolutely no idea that it was real and that it was something authentic. And you'll have to excuse me, too. My office is actually right outside our helipad. So if you can hear a helicopter in the distance or I get drowned, I assure you that it's just a regular routine here.
No worries. No worries. Yeah. It's all good. What do you think are some of the key important mental preparations to get to the point of understanding that this can work for you?
Well, you know what's important is a lot of the times people say, and the example I usually give is, you know, how many times has somebody said, oh, well, you know, if I hit the lottery, this is the first thing I'm going to do, right? We say that all the time. Oh, if I had $1 million, I would do this. But what you don't realize is that is the first step in visualization. That's the first step in vicarious rehearsal. You know, that one's easy to think about, right? Everybody thinks about the easy stuff, right? That's fun. But I think that once we start thinking about the tough things, once we start thinking about the things that we don't want to think about, that's when we start to learn. When you get to the point where you're thinking about things that make you nervous, when your heart starts to beat a little bit faster and you start to feel that little bit of adrenaline because you're thinking about an adverse situation that you might find yourself in, that's exactly the energy that you need to be better. I really am a firm believer that, our road to success is paved with adversity. Those kinds of things make us stronger. So I want people to think about the things that they don't want to think about. Everybody likes to think about what would I do if I hit the lottery. But people don't want to think about a difficult conversation, or they don't want to think about the loss of a family member. And that's extremely important, especially in our jobs, too. You know, you don't want to think about that employee that you're not really too keen on working with. You don't want to think about that member of the team that just doesn't get it. But if you do, and you're able to kind of expand on that and just use a little bit that synergy of imagination and action, I think you can do great things.
There's no question that a proper mental attitude to any of this is key. There's no question about that. When you're looking at the team that surrounds you, how important is it to make sure that they all are on the same wavelength in terms of being able to think these processes through? And I say that because a lot of teams get together and they may have one person that everybody knows isn't that positive or isn't that on board with this new program or this new thing that's happening. And how do you go about having them understand that, hey, it takes everyone. It can't be just one member of the team that isn't going to make that happen. As a leader, you have to take that role on.
Well, you know, that's a great question. It's an important point, too. You know, dare I say, I think that in order to have a successful team, you need that person. You need that person that's kind of not always going to be on board, but they offer a different perspective. Because if we're going to talk about working our own teams to be efficient and working in our teams to be prepared for adversity, well, then, you know, you kind of need all these different perspectives. And you kind of need that individual that's going to say, hey, listen, what about this? Or, you know, somebody that's not always 100% right off the bat saying, okay, yeah, I'm all in. You need somebody that can kind of say, hey, hang on a second, I'm a little concerned about this. Because having that actually helps you navigate into whatever kind of strategic direction you're trying to go in.
So you're thinking through all the different scenarios. You're working with the team to make these things happen. How often do you need to make sure that people practice this? Or how often is really the mental preparedness? How long does it take?
Well, you know what's funny is everything is it's a little bit situational specific. But truthfully, I think that this is a good habit for people to get it. You know, I have people that tell me, hey, Rob, I'm glad you gave that talk because, you know, before I go to a meeting every day, you know, just walking down the hall, I'm taking 30 seconds and saying, okay, this is what I want to get out of this meeting. This is what I'm going to say. This is what I think somebody else is going to say. But these are really my core objectives. That's the key. As long as you take a couple of minutes to think about what you want in emergency management, any emergency that we respond to, any crisis, large or small, we develop what's called an incident action plan. And these are our top three or four objectives of what we want to do for that incident. And that's kind of what I tell people. you know, on your way to a meeting or even if you're sitting in traffic, develop that, you know, relatively concise incident action plan. 3 or 4 points of what your main objectives are for that situation. And frankly, it could just be that 30 seconds on the way to a meeting, or it could be an hour sitting in traffic kind of thinking it through with yourself. But what's important is you dig deeper not just into what you want to do, but how you're going to feel.
And it is a feeling part of this that you have to sometimes get over, isn't it? Emotions can be helpful and a killer at the same time.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
When you're thinking about channeling those emotions the right way, are there steps that somebody can take to think about how to make that work the best way?
You know, I think that once people can feel the situation without actually being the situation, you know, when you're in this controlled environment, kind of thinking about not just what you're going to do, but how you're going to respond and actually what emotions are going to play a part. It's funny that, you know, what you're doing is you're actually allowing your brain to train your body as to how you're going to respond. So that when you encounter it for real after that, your body's actually going to say, hang on a second, I've done this before. Your brain's going to say, wait a second, I've actually seen this before. Because again, you know, you're in a controlled environment in that mental state, thinking about what you're going to do and what emotions are going to play a part. And you can actually use those emotions as fuel.
Well, we're talking to Rob Osgood. He is the Emergency Management Director at Tufts Medical Center in Boston. We've been talking about vicarious rehearsal. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
The following is what happens when you make the switch to Pennzoil Full Synthetic Motor Oils.
Hennessy Performance made the switch and broke the land speed record.
Sonic boom, anyone?
Dodge switched to Pennzoil Full Synthetics and created the world's most powerful muscle car.
Ooh, Hellcat.
And this is what happened when Team Penske made the switch in their Indy cars.
And we have a new champion.
Drive into Jiffy Lube and make the switch to Pennzoil Synthetics.
The following was recorded at a Burger King drive-thru at breakfast.
Morning, welcome to Burger King.
Can I have a bacon, egg, and cheese croissant?
I'm sorry, what's that word you're saying?
Croissant-witch?
Bahama?
Croissant-witch? There's a big poster here.
Oh, you mean croissant-witch? The light, flaky, buttery sandwiches that are 2 for $4.
Yep.
Sure, why didn't you say so in the first place?
Get 2 croissant-witch breakfast sandwiches for just $4, only at Burger King. Limited time only. Price and participation vary.
The people we work with, clients, vendors, coworkers, aren't always in the same office or city or even country. We need to be able to meet, collaborate with them to get things done. So if we're in New York and somebody's in Los Angeles or vice versa, you know, travel is expensive and time-consuming. Communicating via phone, email alone, not always efficient. That's why millions of professionals in business, large and small, rely on Citrix GoToMeeting, and you should too. It's the best way to meet from the convenience of your computer, smartphone, or tablet. This is how it works. With GoToMeeting, hold as many meetings as you need with anyone from anywhere. one virtual space, share screens, and present in real time. Turn on webcams to see each other with high-definition video conferencing. GoToMeeting allows you to engage and connect as if you were in the same room. Highly recommend GoToMeeting. You should try it today and see what it can do for your business. This is what you need to do. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. You visit GoToMeeting.com. You're going to click on the Try It Free button. That's GoToMeeting.com for your free 30-day trial.
If you'd like to be a guest on the HR Power Hour or be a show sponsor, send David an email today at info@hrpowerhour.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Rob Osgood. He is the Emergency Management Director at Tufts Medical Center in Boston. Rob, we've talked a little bit about not only the Patriots Day bombing, but we've also talked about vicarious rehearsal and the mental preparedness that really is it takes to be ready to do what needs to be done in times of crisis. You have a great story that is a little bit kind of brings this all together, kinds of summarizes it. It has to do with the Ebola scare that happened down in the Boston area and had a patient coming to Tufts Medical Center. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how all this came together and worked perfectly for the team?
Absolutely. Thank you, David. You know, we what a lot of people don't know is we actually had the first pediatric patient in New England to be tested for Ebola. Now, this patient was tested negative, obviously. But, you know, we had to run full court press for this patient. And we got a call. It was after. It was probably about 8 o'clock p.m. And they said that we have this patient, and she's going to be en route from another hospital. She was a very young girl who had just returned from Sierra Leone. And she was in a building where a lot of people died. And she was in an area where the virus was running rampant, and she had her dad with her. And they said, she'll be in a couple of hours, so you got some time to prepare. And, you know, this really sort of met all of the criteria for a patient that was going to test positive. Now, again, luckily, it was not, but, again, we had to really, we treated this as though it was the real deal. So we had all of these predetermined protocols, and much like we've already talked about, we had exercised, and we had tested our plans, and we had refined our plans. But this was the first opportunity that we really had where we thought that this was real. So we set off all of the communications, we made all of the appropriate preparations, and we had everything down to a science. We knew who was going to treat the patient. We knew what entrance the patient was going to come in. We knew the supplies that we were going to need. We knew the staff that we needed to be there. And we had this great protocol to get the patient from the back of the ambulance up to the room where the patient would be treated. And the protocol was really top-notch. We designed it with city officials, with EMS. We work very, very closely with Boston EMS. We have a great relationship with them. They helped us design these protocols. I'm an EMT by trade. And so we said, this is fantastic, fantastic protocol. But we never outlined who exactly was going to do it when it was game time. And so I said, you know what? I'm an EMT. I'm more than happy to kind of take the lead here. And I will, I'll be one of the team members that transports the patient from the ambulance up to the room. We really want, we needed a nurse to be the person who would touch the patient. You know, we developed a protocol that we call a hot and cold transport for these types of infectious disease patients. And the reason why we call it hot and cold is because the quote-unquote hot person is the one that has patient contact, and the quote-unquote cold person is the one that opens up all the doors and rings for the elevator and doesn't touch the patient, but they're more like an escort to the hot person. Now, I said, you know what, I'll be the cold person because, you know, I'm not a true clinician here. And they said, no problem, we just need somebody to be the hot person. And I looked in the corner and of our little huddle, and there was this nurse who I work with very, very closely, and she's an incredible nurse, a very talented clinician. And, you know, if I was ever to drop, she's the person that I want taking care of me. And she's also just an amazing person as well. And her name is Claire. And Claire was kind of, she had her eyes closed, and she's kind of running through what looked like these kind of hand motions. And she had her hands down by her side. And Claire looks up, she opens her eyes, and she says, "I'll do it." And what Claire was actually doing was visualizing the route from where the patient would arrive to the facility, through the hallways, into the elevator, and then into the room. She visualized the number of steps. She visualized what the hallways were going to look like, whether the it was nighttime, so we were the lights would have been a little bit dim. She visualized how long it would even take to wait for the elevator. Claire was mentally preparing for a job, and she said, "I will absolutely do it. Rob, you and I can be the transport team." And that's exactly what we did, and frankly, I felt safer with Claire there. But somebody said, "Claire, as long as you have Rob with you, you're going to be fine." And I'll be honest with you, I was the one that felt fine because I had Claire. And what Claire was doing was exactly what we would encourage people to do, not just in times of crisis, but in their own teams every day, visualizing not just the tactics, but the emotions and the feelings, and culminating all that into an exercise in a controlled environment of your own mind.
What a great example of vicarious rehearsal. We're talking with Rob. And we're talking with him about the emergency management director's job at the Tufts Medical Center in Boston. Rob, thank you. We'll be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, and we'll be back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
You make the decision to buy the home, then you're faced with what's next? What do we do?
We started at Realtor.com.
Realtor.com gave us
a lot more current information.
Listings are pulled directly from the MLS every 15 minutes.
Once you've gone through all of that, the Realtor makes it happen.
We worked with the Realtor that really knew the area.
And he knew the market.
When you have someone who has the expertise, it makes it so much easier.
Realtor.com and Realtors. Together, we make home happen. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Your time is just that, yours. That's why Premier Express from Mercedes-Benz is made for you. With no appointment necessary, you can pull up anytime, get dedicated vehicle maintenance, and be in and out in about an hour or less. It's quick, it's convenient, and it's one more way we can give you something special. The luxury of time. Visit mbusa.com/Premier Express today to find a participating dealer near you. Premier Express, it's about you, and it's about time.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay Tees are just $19.99 each when you buy two or more.
A note from the LOB Lobster Pot. Beach Party Boys, a 60s Beach Boys tribute band, appears live in concert Tuesday, June 30th, 7 p.m. at the Salvation Army Seaside Pavilion, 6th Street, Old Orchard Beach. The Yarmouth Summer Art Series presents a free live outdoor concert with the 80s band, The Awesome, Wednesday, July 1, 6 p.m. at Royal River Park, rain date July 2nd.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we've been talking with Rob Osgood. He's the Emergency Management Director, as you know, at Tufts Medical Center in Boston. You know, Rob, one thing I did want to ask, you said as a former student in theater, this actually helped you out a little bit. Tell me how theater and this kind of work together.
Well, you know, that's interesting. As an EMT, you know, like we talked about, I would I'd be bouncing things off with my my partner on the way to a call, and also the same thing in the hospital, as I had to prepare to work with certain types of patients, I would be mentally preparing. But what really got me started was when I did theater in I was a drama geek in high school and also in college, and I used the old trick that that they would help us of getting into character. So, you know, if you were an actor and you were waiting on the wings, you'd kind of close your eyes and say, okay, I got to get into character of what my voice is going to sound like, or, you know, how this character is going to walk, how they're going to deliver the lines. And really all I did was just take those same concepts and apply them to working in EMS or apply them to working in healthcare. And then when I got to grad school and, you know, realized this was kind of a real thing, it was a bit of a shocker for me because I said, well, hang on a second. This is there's an official kind of training like this?
When you said to yourself, this is a real thing, how, you know, for someone who's out there listening to the show right now or has maybe heard you before, how do they start in mentally starting to think about, because, I mean, look, we all do scenarios in our head potentially. How do we make it real enough? Because that's the trick, right? Taking it from what we just think might be a scenario to actually getting into it for real in our mind. What's the steps? What's the takeaways that people can think about when they're listening today that really gets them to understand it's more than just thinking the scenario over? It's about really living it in your mind.
That's correct. You know, just remember, what we're talking about here is the synergy of imagination in action. That's it. It's basically using your brain to train your body to respond and not react. It's thinking not just about the positives, but certainly what happens when things don't go in your favor. Think about it to an extent where it makes you a little nervous, it makes you a little uncomfortable. That's exactly the energy you need to kind of overcome that adversity. Now, if you find yourself constantly thinking about these negative things, I can refer you to some of our psych doctors down here. But really, that's it. It's placing yourself mentally in those uncomfortable situations and then doing what we call developing an incident action plan. That's what we talk about in emergency management. You know, when you're in that situation and when you find yourself up against a challenge, what's going to be your top 3 to 4 priorities that you need to achieve strategically to overcome that challenge?
When somebody's really going through and they're saying, okay, I'm going to do that, is it helpful for them to have a partner to, or a team to talk to this through? Because, look, I can think of many different scenarios in my head, but I don't necessarily know if I'm doing it right.
Well, truthfully, David, being in a situation where you're allowing your mind to kind of have this free flow of creativity, and you're thinking about, all right, what's going to happen if this does not go in my favor? What are the different directions that this can go in? How can I unlock my internal potential? You are doing it right. You know, one thing I tell people that I've learned from this and from years of doing this is, you know, there's a couple of takeaways. And the first is you're a lot stronger than you think you are. And I'm not just talking about how much you can take, how much you can absorb. I'm talking about your resiliency, your ability to bounce back, and particularly on your own team, your way to come back with a new solution. The second thing that that I like to say is, you know, you're going to find yourself in situations that that you can't change. And I think it's important that we're able to kind of adapt to a changing environment, because that's really what this is all about, is training your brain to be able to adapt to a changing environment.
What do you think, as you are talking to leaders, getting their teams together, how do you take this exercise team-wide for a whole group to make that work? As we wrap up here on the show, I'd like to, you know, give some tips on how to get your whole team to do this together and exercises that can make that work.
Well, I think it's engagement. You know, when you're all sitting at the table and you're bouncing around ideas, go a little bit off the script a little. Go a little bit off the track. Talk about things that maybe you don't normally talk about, things that might challenge you, but also things that might excite you as well. Get people engaged. Get them thinking. That's really the beginning of this, is getting people thinking. Working in healthcare and working in emergency medicine and emergency management, you know, we have to do this. We have to be prepared because we don't know what's going to roll through the doors, especially here in downtown Boston. I mean, you have no idea what this city is going to throw at you. So you need to be nimble. You need to be able to, like we talked about, adapt to that changing environment, not just operationally, but mentally.
Well, you know, Rob, this has been a fantastic show. I appreciate all the information you've provided today. For all those listening to the show, they can go to hrpowerhour.com right after the show and click on Rob's information. Contact him that way. His email will be there. And you can make sure that you get any information you need on Vicarious Rehearsal. Rob, thank you so much for being on the show today. We appreciate it tremendously.
It's a privilege and an honor to be a guest. Thank you so much, David.
And now your HR tip of the week. According to TrendHR.com, these applicants may have some gaps in their resumes, but their skill sets, interpersonal and management skills, versatility, and ability to multitask are awesome. Who could they be? Mums, of course. Recently on the Working Mother magazine workplace blog, writer, marketing VP, and mum, Christy Gilsby, outlined the skills that mothers possess that should impress any employer. What are the key areas? Well, first you need to think about mums differently. They think differently. They see things big picture. Second, mums have strong instincts. They have a primal-like instinct that was born inside of her because she is a mother, not only for protection, but also for connection. Next, they're resourceful. Mothers can turn nothing into something. Mothers are multitaskers. They're masters at it. So a stressful day at the office will seem like a breeze compared to the whirlwind of motherhood. And finally, mothers are dependable. If an employer defines dependability as being at a desk from 9 to 5, mothers know how to make it happen 24 hours a day. That's your next HR Tip of the Week. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.